This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:37 in the morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Chuang. Looks like a nice Friday morning on the 27th of May. We're turning our attention now to geopolitics and specifically Turkey, because Turkey was once labeled as the sick man of Europe in the final days of the Ottoman Empire, but it's now being seen as the belligerent man of the continent, as one op-ed in the New York Times described it. This is on the back of Turkey's objections to Sweden and Finland joining the NATO alliance, as well as recent escalations intentions with another NATO member, which is Greece.
Yep, Turkey is interesting to watch because of its unique alliance or connections across the geopolitical sphere. It's been a member of NATO since 1952. It's been negotiating membership of the EU since the early 2000s. It's got a military presence in northern Syria after it launched a ground offensive against Kurdish militia, who are backed by the US in turn, putting it at odds with the White House. It's also maintained good relations with Russia, even as it condemned Russia for its invasion of Ukraine. And despite ties to NATO, additionally, Erdogan's leadership is being scrutinized at home because of economic conditions that are souring for the country.
Consumer prices have soared 70% in Turkey, and the lira has plunged against the dollar amid questionable monetary policy direction there. So how does Turkey's foreign policy moves reflect what's happening on the domestic front? For a better understanding of what's at stake for Turkey, we speak to Dr. James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the Middle East Institute of the National University of Singapore. James, good morning. It's always good to have you. Now, Sweden and Finland are largely seen as shoo-ins for NATO membership, if not for Turkey's objections. How much of its opposition is a stumbling block to the two countries' accession?
Good morning. It's a stumbling block by definition, because membership in NATO has to be agreed upon unanimously. And all you need is one vote to obstruct that, and that vote is at this point Turkey. I think I would, coming back to your introduction, probably describe Turkey as the obstructionist power in Europe and Russia as the belligerent one. But in any case, it is about obstruction here for political goals.
James, what's the background of Turkey's fight against the Kurdistan Workers' Party? I mean, they are active in northeastern Turkey, and Iraq and Syria. How does this factor into its NATO objections?
Well, first of all, the Kurds are the world's largest stateless population, and they're spread across several countries, first and foremost Turkey, Iraq, and Syria. In Turkey, they make up to 20% of the population. And Turkey, for a very long time, much of its existence, would not even recognize the existence of the Kurds. They were termed the Mountain Turks. I recall being, in about 40 years ago, being kicked out of southeastern Turkey and threatened with execution because I referred to them as Kurds rather than as Mountain Turks. That situation has obviously improved over time. Kurdish as a language is permitted today, but Kurds do not have full cultural, ethnic, and religious rights. And the Kurdish Workers' Party, the PKK, has been waging a low-intensity guerrilla war against Turkey for the last four decades. And the Turks view any national expression or nationalistic aspiration by the Kurds as a threat to their territorial integrity.
So how credible or valid then is Turkey's assertion of Sweden and Finland harboring terrorist affiliates, which I presume is our PKK affiliates?
Well, the problem here is who's a terrorist? I mean, as we've seen across the globe, terrorist or terrorism is a liberally applied term to anybody you don't like. So in terms of Finland and Sweden, this is much more about Sweden than it is about Finland. And Sweden has a not insignificant Kurdish population. These are Kurds from various parts of the Middle East, not just Turkey, who have migrated to Sweden over the years. Many are today Swedish nationals. There are six members of the Swedish parliament that are of Kurdish origin. One of Sweden's top soccer clubs is a Turkish Kurdish club. Now, a lot of the Kurds outside of Turkey do have nationalist empathies and identify as, in this case, being Swedish as well as being Kurdish. And so they are labeled as terrorists by Turkey by definition, whether or not they are in favor of an armed struggle, whether or not they have any organic link with the PKK, not really mattering. Mm-hmm.
James, how would you rationalize Turkey's NATO maneuvers? What are the larger stakes at play here?
Well, what I think is going on is not that at the end of the day, Turkey will block Finland and Sweden. Keep in mind that, you know, NATO membership for Turkey is a two-way road. So, with other words, it's the NATO members need Turkey. Its southern flank of NATO for many years was the only NATO state bordering on the former Soviet Union. But on the other hand, what's happening in Eastern Europe and the Caucasus, so with other words, you've seen the Russians take or support irredentist movements in Georgia in 2008. You had the annexation of Crimea in 2014, and now, of course, the war in Ukraine. All of that impacts Turkey as a Black Sea power, and all of that implicitly poses a threat to Turkey, and therefore NATO is part of its defense shield. So this is really about scoring points, whether that's going to be a lifting of a Swedish and Finnish embargo that was weapons embargo that was imposed on Turkey in 2019 when it first invaded Syria. The embargo doesn't mean much because the Swedes and the Finns aren't the major armed suppliers for Turkey, or whether it means some concessions on Finnish and Swedish support for the Kurds, or ultimately whether the payoff is going to be U.S. arms sales, which again have been blocked because of, on the one hand, Turkish policies in Syria, anti-Kurdish policies, but also because of Turkey's acquisition of the Russian-made S-400 anti-missile system.
All right, so a lot at play there on the international front. But James, I do wonder, how much of this posturing in NATO is meant to distract the domestic audience from Turkey's economic situation, which, as we discussed earlier, is pretty dire at this stage?
Well, I don't think it's so much distract from the economic situation. You've got 70% inflation. It's going to be very tough to distract people away because they really feel in their pocketbooks. But what I do think it does is it plays to nationalist sentiment in Turkey. It plays to anti-Western, or not so much anti-Western, much more anti-American sentiment in Turkey. And that, of course, benefits President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
James, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Dr. James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the Middle East Institute of the National University of Singapore, giving us just a breakdown of how Turkey sees itself in this geopolitical power play, what with NATO and what with really trying to regain some of its arms, I suppose, access to arms at the moment. I feel this is a pretty interesting player to watch in this space, something we'll be keeping an eye on moving forward. 7:46 in the morning, coming up to 7:47, we're heading into some messages. And then after that, we'll discuss whether there should be a regulatory overhaul of e-hailing platforms in Malaysia. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.